Ladies and gentlemen, I'm very pleased to be able to introduce to you Antonio Tajani. Antonio Tajani is a personality not only in Italy but in Europe, and his experience is extremely diverse. If I'm not mistaken, he had a career first as a journalist during 20 years, not only Britain but also the television. So that's one way to gather information, experience about what's going on in society. And then he became a politician and became a member of the European Parliament for 15 years, learning the trade, how things function at the European level. And since 2008, he has become a commissioner in the first Barroso mandate, and then since 2008 he has been a commissioner, a vice president of the commission, and also commissioner for industry, space and tourism. And this has been a very important moment because the challenge is extremely important, how to design an industrial policy for Europe. As you know, each nation has its own industrial policy, but by the very fact that all these nations have their own industrial policies, the effectiveness of these policies is extremely reduced, and the big challenge is how to transform industrial policy at the European level so as to make it more effective, so as to be able to compete with other great nations. And that is the challenge that Antonio Tajani has taken up, and he's going to talk tonight about these issues, about these challenges, and I'm very pleased to give you the floor.
Okay.
Yes, please.
Good evening, everybody. Thank you very much, Professor, for your presentation. Buonasera agli italiani, ne sono parecchi. It's an honor for me to be here today. The London School of Economics is a world famous institute of economics, philosophy and political science, but above all it's a model of tolerant, open and free intellectual truth. So why the topic an industrial compact for Europe? I wanted to share with you my experiences in industrializing Europe, our work in progress and my vision of the future of the European industry. My audience is also usually one from a politician, like me, a speech with political content, ideas for their own future, and they want to hear a vision or, in simple words, how a European politician sees things when confronted with the current challenges. I will try today to provide input under those perspectives. I have traveled a lot these last few months inside and outside the European Union. The world is changing very quickly, and I want to share with you a couple of thoughts. Which is my vision? When I arrived at the Commission a couple of years ago, industry was in the corner. Even our engineers wanted to work only in the financial sector and not in manufacturing. It seemed the best industrial policy was no industrial policy at all. Let me say from the beginning that I have nothing against the finance sector. Quite the opposite. I have been working hard for a good marriage between finance sector and real economy. But if there is one lesson we can learn from this crisis, it is that countries with good industry have suffered less, whereas countries with poor industry have had difficult times. Against the background, I have been trying since the beginning of my mandate to implement a dream to reindustrialize Europe. But what kind of reindustrialization do I have in mind? On that is innovative, green, technologically advanced and modern. On that support, 23 million SMEs, which are the heart of our economy. In the UK alone, SMEs account for 99.9% of all private sector businesses and 14.5 million jobs. To put it simply, I am supporting manufacturing of the third industrial revolution. I will, of course, make several references to the UK today. I have been to this country many times during my mandate. I have said in private very often to British politicians, and I have no problem in saying it now in public. The UK is a protagonist of this third industrial revolution. There is a lot of convergence between what I am leading in Brussels and what is being done in London. My mandate expires in less than 1 year. I want industry to be at the center of the economy when I leave. I am convinced that for a future with more growth and jobs, industry can never be again put in the corner. I would like to start by providing you with the state of play of the European industry. The European industrial decline began at the end of the 90s. The 2008 crisis led to a significant acceleration of this process. We have lost 4 billion jobs, and manufacturing production has fallen from 20% of our GDP to 15%. At the same time, we have lost half of global investments, acquiring 350 billion euros in the last 5 years. The desertification of production leads to economic and political decline. One industry closing means, above all, the loss of a heritage of knowledge and of technical expertise. Low skills which are difficult to develop. However, the overall situation is not that bad. For example, the European pharmaceutical and agri-food sectors have globally been making money despite the crisis. Concerning the automotive sector, some German manufacturers are having very good results, whereas others are doing less well. The fact is, however, that the European automotive market is slowly recovering, and recent figures, notably here in the UK, are encouraging. It is true that two important sectors, construction and metal, still have turnover figure below 2008, but there again, the latest figures are improving. I have mentioned five important manufacturing sectors: pharmaceutical, agro-food, automotive, construction and metal. Defense and security are also important European industries. The next meeting of the leader of our member states will debate on this, on defense policy, next week in Brussels. But there are also smaller sectors which are doing very well. Space, key enabling technologies, high-end industries, and tourism. I want to especially draw the attention of the student to those sectors because the growth prospects are strong and the job opportunities are many. In space, the EU has invested over 20 billion euros on its three satellites navigation projects: Galileo, the EGNOS signal augmentation project, and the Earth observation project Copernicus. These projects are expected to bring benefits totaling 120 billion euros over the next 20 years. They will also have an enormous positive impact on new services and applications. They will lead to increased competitiveness in key sectors, including transportation, electric grids, security, cyber protection, border control, agriculture, maritime and fishing industries, and financial services. And let me add a political remark. In all my business trips abroad, I detect a growing political interest from third countries in our space policy. I signed a lot of agreements also during my last mission in Far East. In conclusion, not only does space offer huge business opportunities for Europe, but it also brings greater political influence. Another sector is key enabling technologies, nanotechnology, micro and nanoelectronics, including semiconductors, advanced materials, biotechnologies and photonics, are all growing spectacularly in the European Union. Mastering these technologies means managing the shift to a low-carbon knowledge-based economy. And they want to put these technologies on our radar because they have huge potential. We are determined to support CETS, both politically and financially, to keep European leadership in this crucial field. High-end industry is another sector where Europe is a global leader with a world market share of 70%. Being part of the creative economy, European high-end products are exported worldwide and act as ambassadors for European manufacturing, heritage and culture. This industry contribution to the European economy should not be underestimated. It represents 3% of European GDP, a turnover of more than 400 billion euros and almost 1 million direct jobs. And the interesting thing is that European high-end industries have proven remarkably resilient to the crisis. The sector has shown consistent growth and stable job creation despite the crisis. Tourism is another industrial sector which is growing. It's the only sector going up during the crisis, also in Greece. Europe is, and will be for a long time to come, the world's number one tourism destination. It is indeed a wonderful continent to be visited. We have history, art, gastronomy, mountains, nice beaches, and good communications. The number of potential visitors from Russia, China, India, Southeast Asia, Latin America, and Africa is immense. But we have to modernize our visa policy. For this, I will propose with my colleague Cecilia Masters, responsible for European Home Affairs, new, more flexible rules for visa for tourists coming from abroad. We need more tourists coming from Russia, from China. This is very important for our economy and for our tourism industry. I know the UK is not in the Schengen area, but I also know that the modernization of visa policy in the EU can have a positive spillover effect here. We have to use more modern technologies in order to facilitate the issuing of visas. You will soon be hearing interesting news from Brussels on this. I think we will have the new proposal before the end of this year or the beginning 2014. In 2012, the Commission launched a strategy for the reindustrialization of Europe, aimed at increasing the share of manufacturing in the European economy from 15% to 20% of GDP by 2020. This section is based in four pillars: more investments in innovation, training growth linked to companies, better access to finance and the markets. In times of limited resources, we have identified certain high potential priorities area of technology, where benefits will have a large spillover effect on other sectors. These sectors include the bioeconomy, key enabling technologies, low carbon vehicles, smart grids, raw materials, sustainable construction, and technologies for advanced manufacturing. Where is the money for this policy? There will be money to co-finance this reindustrialization. First, the budget of Horizon 2020 is our program for research and innovation. More or less 70 billion euros from 2014 to 2020. We want to put this money in favor of research and innovation only for industries, because for many years our big mistake to put money only for the research. Example, key enabling technologies. Our research is over the top in the world, but China and Japan utilized for many years our research for Japanese and Chinese companies against European companies. It's a big, very stupid, a big mistake for our competitors. For this, European Commission changed in this package, Horizon 2020, the money is for innovation research only in favor of industries and small and medium-sized companies. There is another package, 2.5 billion euros, for SMEs competitiveness. Money for internationalization of small and medium-sized companies. Money for tourism is the first time after the Lisbon Treaty. And money for venture capital. Access to finance is crucial. We need more venture capital in Europe, as in the United States. Venture capital are very, very important for access to finance for small and medium-sized companies. Fortunately, the European Union has created the largest free and open market in the world. We have a common commercial policy, a monetary union, an instrument to manage and parallel the challenges, like increasing global competition, growing scarcity of resources, precarious energy security, and accelerating climate change. These are challenges not single country, not even Germany or the United Kingdom can overcome alone. But stopping to consider complacently the achievements of the past and defending the status quo would be an error. The rapidly changing world, the global financial and the euro crisis, this spreading populism, together with the rise of the new aggressive emerging economies, force us to adapt and to elaborate a new vision for the future. As Einstein said, all crises bring progress. And Europe, with a third of its youth unemployed, cannot afford to miss this opportunity. Of course, no one is proposing the construction of a sort of a bureaucratic monster far from its member states and its people. The debate about subsidiarity must be our compass and help guide the debate. All that can be done near the ground, close to the citizens, at the national, at the local level, must not be a Brussels competence. The Commission may at most assist the Member States to exchange best practices and to collaborate, but certainly it cannot impose top-down solutions. I refer, first of all, to the architecture of the Monetary Union, which has proven itself fragile and incomplete. The need for adequate instruments to correct the growing competitive divergences, as well as the structural imbalances which put the euro at risk, have now become evident. Certainly, the Member States must play their part with ambitious reform programs to improve their competitiveness. Furthermore, without real economic governance, a federal budget, mutual fund instruments such as Eurobonds, project bonds, and a central bank founded on the model of the USA Federal Reserve, the risks for the Eurozone remain high. I have said before, and I repeat here now, in my personal opinion, euro is too strong and this should be corrected because it could harm the recovery and reduce our possibilities to export ever more. It's important to debate on this. We need a new strategy for our money, is my position. The euro is not a goal. Euro is an instrument for growth, for jobs, for our economy, for our small and medium-sized companies, for our industrial policy. I am also supportive of the banking union because the real economy needs a stable and solid financial sector to recover. Europe is slowly but gradually coming round from the illusion of being able to outsource its manufacturing industry. To lose this industry means abandoning the source of 80% of European innovation, 3/4 of European exports, and 1 private sector job out of 2. It also means putting in danger all related services. None of this happened because of fate. Serious errors were made, and we must be honest in recognizing this. Finance, initially the engine of the real economy, has become itself losing touch with industry. We have created an excess of rules and bureaucracy and obstacles, often without purpose, which are a burden of European entrepreneurs. Bureaucracy and red tape. This is the most, with the access to finance, one of the most important problems. With the price of energy. The cost of energy are the highest in the world. We need an European, very European market for energy. We are studying the impact of the energy price for industry competitiveness. I will present with my colleague for energy policy, Mr. Oettinger, a paper on this before the next European Council in February. Also, it's important to work in favor of our internal market. But it's important also to back, at the same time, our small and medium-sized company. We must implement better the Think Small First principle. The introduction of SME supporting factor in Basel III is a step in the right direction, but more must be done. We have to make more progress on standardization. The more global the standards, the more our SMEs can use the internal market and export using common rules. The removal of such obstacles would make Europe a more attractive place to invest. Without this reform, it's impossible to attract new investment coming from abroad in Europe. We need structural reforms, investment targeting infrastructure, as well as training and innovation. Better access to international markets is also key to relaunching our industries. From now until 2020, 75% of world growth will come from emerging economies. The Commission therefore promotes a better access to global markets with a special emphasis on SMEs. Other point, the elimination of tariff and technical barriers to trade, achieved in part through more assertive commercial policies, as well as more free trade agreements, beginning with the Transatlantic Trade Investment Partnership Agreement, which is funded to kick-start our economy. Our business diplomacy to get access to raw materials is also increasingly important. Let me say a few words on the European Union-United States of America negotiations. As you know, independent research shows that, with the agreement in place, the EU's economy could be boosted by €120 billion. Our gross domestic product could grow 0.5%, and each household will gain €545 a year, around £445. The negotiations have already started, and I have to say two things. Firstly, the main problem is not so much custom duties, but rather the mutual recognition of standards and certification. We are doing our utmost to overcome obstacles in order to make progress. Secondly, I am in permanent contact with European industry, and I detect a great consensus in making progress quickly with the United States. In the same time, we are working for a free trade agreement with Japan and with Canada. Also, it's important to increase assistance to the European enterprises delivered by the European Union representation and the European Enterprise Network. Other point, our mission for growth. I am organizing a lot of industrial mission under the European Commission umbrella in many countries. Since 2011, I have led Mission for Growth, accompanied by European Enterprise and Business Association, to Brazil, Argentina, Uruguay, Colombia, Mexico, the United States, Morocco, Tunisia, Egypt, Russia, China, Israel, Vietnam, Myanmar, and Thailand. In this context, let me for a moment underline a point which I hope is of particular interest to the students in the audience. If I were to give you a tip on where the opportunities for young professionals lie, I would say it is in the internationalization of our companies. Internationalization is not the localization. Internationalization is to work here and to work abroad. The localization is to work only abroad. I have traveled a lot outside of Europe, leading business trips, and I have seen with my own eyes the huge potential of Europe abroad. Several third countries are growing fast, and they have an appetite for the European quality of our products. But Europe is not only good in manufacturing with quality. I had a very interesting discussion 3 weeks ago in Myanmar with Burmese Nobel Prize winner Aung San Suu Kyi. She wrote to me that business is needed, but above all, ethical and responsible business is needed more than ever, and Europe is a world leader in that field of corporate social responsibility. This is important also to have a target, not only investments abroad, but also good investments against climate change, for example, in this country, in Burma. It's very, very important to study a good strategy with a good link in these countries. Discouraging or creating obstacles to entrepreneurship means boycotting jobs and growth. Therefore, a cultural revolution is necessary. Where public administration view the entrepreneurs as a positive actor bringing benefits to society. Europe must reduce the time needed to obtain a license, to open a company, to receive credit, to establish a contract or conclude bankruptcy. Based on the model of the directive for late payments, obliging public administration to pay companies within 30 days, I intend to propose binding measures to enact certain principles already present in the Small Business Act. I refer, for example, to principles such as the setting up of a company within 3 days at a cost of less than 100 euros, authorizing license within 30 days, and reducing the time needed to recuperate credits through judicial channels. Red tape is a problem. The time is also very important. We are still not sufficiently exploiting the great potential of information technologies. Only half of the EU member states have e-government services designed for companies. Recent estimates indicate that the widespread use of these technologies would cut 20% of costs. Because of this, digital services are at the top of the agenda for growth in Europe 2020. Reducing the burden of companies means, first of all, legislation less and better. Legislating less and better. The EU must be an example. To accomplish this, we have implemented an obligatory competitiveness test for each new legislative proposal. We are working also with the European Union, because we want have already achieved our objective of 20% reduction, leading to an estimated 30.8 billion euros in savings. However, we want to go even further, achieving saving of 41 billion euros per year. Finally, Europe must change, enacting reforms and policies for commerce, the internal market, research, energy, the environment and infrastructure. All these policies must be coherent with European reindustrialization. For many last years, Europe worked in favor of fiscal compact. But if you want to beat the crisis, we need two pillars, the fiscal compact and the industrial compact. Because without a good action in favor of growth, in favor of real economy, in favor of industry, in favor of small and medium-sized companies, it's impossible to beat the crisis. Only with sacrifices, it's impossible to beat the crisis. For this is important to have this new industrial compact. For this is important to have this industrial revolution. It's important to access to finance. For this, European Commission will propose to the leaders of the 28 member states this industrial compact. I want a document in the end of this European Council, February next year, with a document in favor of this coordination, in favor of real economy. We want to change, and the target is 20% of our GDP before end 2020 coming from manufacturing sector. The crisis has highlighted the fragility of unbalanced economies, which risks losing touch with their productive base. The UK is pursuing an industrial revolution which can only praise. Before coming here, I attended a very important European conference on fashion and high-end industries. I was also here discussing European space policy a couple of years ago in Buckingham Palace with Minister David Willetts and other members of the space family in the presence of His Royal Highness, the Duke of York. Very important meeting here in the UK. We are working together in favor of the new space industrial policy, in favor of many new competitive sectors. Let me conclude. My mother was a professor of Latin and ancient Greek. Therefore, I grew up with permanent references to Greek and Roman authors. One of my favorites has always been Demosthenes, the Greek statesman. He said that small opportunities are often the beginning of great enterprises. I leave that too with you. I have shared my dream with you today. But I also want to back your dream. We need more young entrepreneurs. I look at you. There are in this room many potential young entrepreneurs. Between you, there are many women and men entrepreneurs. To be entrepreneurs is the future. It's important. Which is your future? To be civil servant or to be entrepreneurs? The future is to be entrepreneur, of course. I want to back your dream. The risk, the future is your. The future is in young people. I have a son and a daughter. Two young people is the future. I'm not the future. You are the future. And without entrepreneurs, we don't have an industrial policy. We need an industrial policy. We need more small and medium-sized companies. As I said, there are 23 million of entrepreneurs in Europe. This is the heart of our economy. This is the future. And without entrepreneurs, we don't have growth, we don't have jobs. You are the future. You are the new entrepreneurs. You are the leaders of the European reindustrialization. Thank you.
Thank you very much for this inspiring speech and trying to instill in these young people here the sense of entrepreneurship. I very much share this view. Now the question, of course, is whether these young entrepreneurs will be able to stop the decline of industry that we have observed in the last 30, 40 years. But certainly that's a challenge that we face. Now I would like to open the floor to questions. And who would like to start? Yeah. Can you also present yourself?
Thank you for this presentation. It was very inspiring. My name is Yanis Korkoulos, and I'm a graduate student at the European Institute here. You talked about young people, innovation, research, and I would like to ask you about a comment on whether the current situation with austerity is reconcilable with these potentials that exist. Thank you.
We need to reduce the public debt in many European countries. But in the same time, we need a strong action in favor of growth and favor of jobs. The only solution is an industrial policy. Industrial policy is, of course, strong action in favor of industries, but also in favor of small and medium-sized companies, in favor of our internal market. Europe is the biggest market in the world. It's important to work in favor of this, because it's impossible to beat the crisis only with sacrifices. Europe is not only sacrifices, also solidarity. I come from Portugal. During last week, I organized this mission for growth within European Union in Portugal. Many European companies, but also companies coming from Brazil, from the USA, from China. In Portugal for B2B with Portuguese companies. They want to invest in Portugal. This is European solidarity. The real economy is European solidarity. It's impossible to beat the crisis only with sacrifices. This is a big mistake. It's important to understand what's happening in many, many countries. Why, for example, there are many votes in favor of Front National in France, from Five Stars in Italy, from Alba Dorata in Greece. Also in the UK, there is a party on the right, on the Conservative Party. Why? Because people is unhappy. There are problems. We need a new strategy. I am pro-European, I am in favor euro, but I want to build a more modern, more competitive, more solidar Europe. But this is important also to change our policy. For this industrial compact is only a sector, but in finance sector, for example, it's important to have a banking union. Banking union is a good solution for more money in Europe, for access to finance. It's not a solution against banks. It's a solution in favor of small and medium-sized companies. Access to finance is one of the most important problems
For this, it's important to study, to build a new Europe, also the euro. The euro, in my opinion, is not a goal, it's an instrument for our industrial policy. Today, as I said, euro is too strong for our export. It's too strong for our competitiveness. We need a very European central bank with more powers. The problem is not only stability, it's also growth. We need new rules, of course, because the president of Mr. Draghi, the president of the European Central Bank, is working well in favor of growth and in favor of stability. But the problem today is not only stability, the danger is the deflation. This is one of the most important dangers for our economy. But this is important to have a new, more modern policy for our economy in Europe. The solution is not sacrifices. Of course, it's important to reduce the public debt.
But you will try to convince Olivier and your colleague about this.
I am discussing on this.
Okay. Next question. Yeah, please.
Giulia Passarella, PhD student at the European Institute in Political Science, but with a passing interest in space. So my question will be about space policy specifically. Obviously, since the Lisbon Treaty, space has become a shared competence, and at least in academic circles, the main debate is still how to square this with the presence of ESA, the European Space Agency. Now, you mentioned that next week there'll be a meeting of heads of states and governments concerning defence, and that space will be a main part of the debate. Now, given that ESA has a different membership than the European Union, how do you deal with such difficult and delicate matters as defence policy with ESA, which has other members? And then my second question, also related to this relationship, is supposing, as some speculate, that ESA will one day become a European agency. First of all, how do you combine the two procurement policies that are very different, ESA being the jus structure and obviously the European Union being just free competition, especially in relation to your sort of protecting the small and medium-sized enterprises, which are going to be penalized if the jus structure is scraped, rather.
You know very well the space sector, also you know very well the problems. But I think space policy is very important for us. There are many billion euros for Galileo, for Copernicus, and for EGNOS, the father of Galileo. We will have, before end of this year, the next year, the first services coming from Galileo in many sectors. We will launch in April the first Sentinel of a Copernicus system. The timing is important because if we respect the time, we will reduce the cost, because the European Union invested more or less 20 billion euros on space policy for these three programs, but it's possible to have good effect on 120 billion euros in the next years. The problem with ESA is our space agency. We are working well with ESA, but as you know, in the ESA Council there are many European member states, but not all European member states, and Norway, Canada, and Switzerland. But this is important also to work in favor. It's my job also to defend member states working not in ESA, because the money It's European money, not as a member state money. But this is important to balance this situation. It's not easy. But this, also this morning in the European Council, the debate was on this, the link between ESA and European Commission. But because I am Italian, it's possible to have everyday compromise. It's important to... Your question is is crucial, because it's the point, the key point, the cooperation between also Galileo Agency in Prague and the in the next years, the work for this space policy. But we need a good cooperation. I am working for this. I want to achieve this goal. Now we are working well with Mr. Dordain. For me now it's crucial to have satellites, Galileo satellites, for the first services. I promised first services before end 2014, beginning 2015. It's possible to have, Mr. Dordain promised, it's possible to do it. We will have also on defense policy. We are working on space is one of on the most important point, but it's very complicated our work. Yesterday also the European competitive European Council approved a strategy in favor of defense industry. European Commission approved the communication before holidays with many proposals. No more European rules, but good implementation of two directives, and also good standards for a good implementation. It's possible with a good cooperation between member states to reduce the cost of our defense and to utilize this money for other sectors. Through a better cooperation, with a better cooperation, it's possible to reduce the cost. If you want, it's possible through your email, you will invite the text of our defense strategy approved by the European Commission.
Okay. Yeah, Maurice?
Vice President, thank you very much for a very inspiring talk. What do you attribute the demise of the concept of European champions? If you think 20 years ago, 15 years ago, 10 years ago, no speech on European industrial policy, well, particularly speeches on European industrial policy from some countries, usually France, would talk about the absolute importance of having more European champions. That's the sort of language we hear a lot less these days, maybe because it's became evident that this is not obviously compatible with a strong competition policy. But why do you think? Do you think that the concept still has any relevance? It sounds curiously old-fashioned now.
My personal opinion. We need new rules in this sector because our rules on competition are approved in 1957. The world, Europe, six member states, United States of America, and Canada. Competition is very important for access to our rules for competition are very good for access for every small medium companies also the access to the market. But today the situation is not the same. There are Russia and not USSR, China, liberal regime, communist, liberal communist regime. India, Brazil, Mexico, and Africa. The question is, it's possible to compete at global level after the globalization with the same rules made in 1957? Because these rules open the door for the competition within the European Union. But in my opinion, they close the door for the competition at global level. For this, we need two different steps. The first, for the competition within the European Union. And the second, for the competition at global level. We need a new strategy. Of course, it's important to debate this. Competition is very important. But it's important. I defend the competition. I am totally in favor. It's a value for the European Union. But it's important, in my personal opinion, to change its rules. We need more modern rules for the competition. Because it's impossible with this rule, it's impossible, very difficult to compete at global level with these rules. For instance, I want to work in favor of the European champion in the world. There are many sectors where in Europe there is a very important know-how. Many sectors where Europe is very strong, it's possible to compete at top level, key enabling technology, for example, defense sector, agri-food sector. But without new rules, it's very difficult to compete.
Okay, thank you. I'm afraid I'll have to conclude here and stop the discussion. I'm very sorry. I understand that Commissioner Tajani has to catch the train, and it is the last train to Brussels today. Of course, you can stay longer. We might go to the pub with you afterwards. But I guess you have other commitments in Brussels that make all this very difficult. You are preparing programs and policies that are of great importance. And how do we stop the decline of industry in Europe is certainly a challenge we face, and we hope you will be successful. And thank you very much for this talk today.
Thank you for your support.